Ladies, gents, thanks for coming along to Lord's today. Delighted to say we've got Stuart with us. He's been on board for the best part of 2 weeks. Stuart's giving up his time this afternoon for purposes of a press call. So lots of mics on the desk. So we're going to have a normal press conference. After that, I've had a few requests for broadcast, so radio and TV. So I think Sky are coming. I think Crick Info have asked for a broadcast interview. So we'll do the press call first, then we'll go and do one-to-ones. After that, we have some photos with Getty, so I'm hoping that Getty will be able to share those photos afterwards. So if you need any pictures, that's great. If not, we've got our own in-house photographer here who will be taking snaps, so that's fine. Whilst I understand that there is an important series going on in the Caribbean at the moment, and Stuart might have recently vacated a certain role that makes him quite important to that, we are here today to talk about Middlesex, so I appreciate there's probably going to be some questions on the Windies England series, but if we can keep this Middlesex cricket focus, that's why Stuart's here, and that would be my preference for the day. So if you want to crack on, thank you.
Thanks much.
Stuart, as an Essex and Lancashire player, what are your memories of sort of facing Middlesex and Middlesex as a club?
Well, the most pleasing thing about coming to play at Middlesex, if you're lucky enough to play at Lord's, I'm a massive traditionalist, and to play at, probably the best ground, well, it is the best ground in the world, was a real buzz. To play against Middlesex, I had the pleasure of playing against Angus Fraser quite a few times, and, he's a grumpy old bugger on the cricket field, and nothing much has changed. But he's, it's obviously a massive club, Middlesex, huge fan base. And a real traditional club, so to come here to play was great for the surroundings, but also to play against a club of great quality, and the names that have been through here was an honour and a privilege, really. So
was it an easy decision to take the job
here? No, it wasn't. I was very upfront and honest with both Middlesex and the West Indies, saying that I love my job that I was currently in. The thing in coaching, and I've learnt that very quickly, is very, very rarely do you get a term as a coach of more than 2 years. So to actually be offered 4 years was one thing that really pricked me ears up. And then the rest of it, take the consideration of family. I've just said to a few of the guys here that this Christmas was the first time I spent time with my wife and my son on a 10-day period without any interruptions for the first time in 10 years. So, I've got a 17-year-old son, a very patient wife. I've been very selfish recently, heading off all around the world and, leaving them to their own devices, only seeing them once every, 3 months. The appeal to actually live and work in the same country as your family live, it really took over. And I've got to understand that family for me does come first, and my immediate family particularly, I haven't seen enough of them over the last couple of years, so this was a great opportunity, but also the opportunity, as I said before, playing here was great, but to actually work in your offices here at Lord's, that's pretty special.
Stuart, what strengths will you bring to the
Look, I don't really know what's gone before me. Being an outsider coming in, I think I'll add, fresh ideas. I think those who know me from my playing days, I'm slightly different to what I was as a player. I've softened quite considerably. I think being a father helps you do that as well. But also, working in the different cultures that I have done, you learn how to treat people. What I try and achieve with the roles I go into is communication. Make sure the lines of communication are well and truly open. And that's between me, players, and me and the staff and the bosses. So as long as we've got an open line of communication, everyone knows exactly where they stand. I think you can keep a team very happy. There's going to be some disappointments, obviously. Players not playing the game, that's the biggest disappointment. But as long as they're communicated correctly and the reasons why, I think there shouldn't be too many issues. So that's one thing. I was a tough player mentally, tough player verbally, so hopefully an ounce of toughness will rub off into the dressing room. I think once Middlesex, I've just watched them train the players that we've got here currently, and you know, the high skill levels, you know, great. The work ethic's fantastic. You can add just a bit of steel to, you know, the mental side of things. I think with the skill level there, you got, you know, I think you've got a pretty good package. So it's about me. It's about being open and honest, but also having that hard edge, but delivered with a softer touch.
See, this morning, three of the younger players have signed contract extensions. I mean, is that kind of where you're at in the first couple of weeks, just thinking it's building for the future with the young players, or is it, or how's the squad shaping up?
Yeah, for me, look, it's about observing at the moment, checking attitudes of players, just having conversations. I'm not a big meeting person. I don't like meetings. Never liked them as a player. As I prefer to do my meetings on the run. So if you see, you know, me and talking to someone else, it's better doing it in their environment rather than pulling them into an office. So just having general conversations, asking, you know, challenging questions, challenging the player constantly, and finding out where they sit, whether mentally, where they fit, physically. And from what I've seen, it's very encouraging. As I say, great group of young men. You know, David Milans, he's signed on for an extended, you know, 3-year period. Youngsters, there's four more being announced tomorrow, and all are multi-year deals. So that's a good sign that we've got a good core nucleus that are going to be together for that period of time. So it's all going well and good for Middlesex at this stage. And we've just got to get them, you know, up to speed with their training, and then, you know, look to, you know, start playing good cricket come, you know, mid-March.
So what are your...
What was the best piece of advice, coaching advice, you received as a player? And how you managed to use it, now you're okay?
I can't really recall it. I've said it openly. The best coach I played under was Geoffrey Thompson. So a lot of things he says you can't repeat. you know, so, but, you know, as a player, I went through highs and lows. And there's a few guys in the dressing room now that are going through similar things. You know, you get picked for your country, then you get dropped. And sometimes there's no explanation, or the explanation you receive is not what you want to hear. And I reckon Tomo sat me down, I'll keep it clean, Tomo sat me down and just said, you know, look, those things happen. You know, all you can do is worry about what you're doing here right now. That'll take care of itself. So that's probably the best piece of advice I ever got as a player. And, you know, he elaborated it slightly by saying, you know, prove people wrong. And I enjoyed doing that. I got told constantly I wasn't good enough to play international cricket. And to go back and score runs as I did in first class cricket, come over here, play in county cricket and score a lot of runs, just started proving those people, you know, weren't quite correct.
So what are your aspirations over to the 1, 2, 3, 4 year term in terms of winning cups, trophies, championships?
Yeah, I'm like everyone else. I don't like losing. You know, so... It's on a skill level. Obviously, the skill needs to remain and improve on, you know, day by day, week by week. But for me, it's about a mental change, and to get that into that group, this group, to think about playing different cricket. You know, I've been given specifics on areas to improve, and one day cricket's one of them, white ball cricket. And that to me is not really a physical thing. It's a mental thing. When you look at this squad. You know, the majority of them won the championship in Division 1 2 years ago. So the skill level's there, the ability's there. Just to transfer that into, you know, the white ball arena is a mental change more than a physical change. So, you know, what I don't like sitting here, I learned very early too, playing for Queensland, that if you worry about winning trophies, you never do. You've got to worry about, you know, what's right to get the thing, your game right. To understand roles within the team. Once you understand all those, things will fall into place. You know, if you start winning games, you've got a chance of winning championships.
Speaking with Owen Morgan last year, you found it quite difficult jumping between championship and white ball cricket.
Mm.
I don't know if that's going to be a challenge for you and the counties in general.
Yeah, mate, look, I'd like to think that As a batsman, we talk about tempo. For me, between Test cricket and One Day cricket, your tempo is pretty similar. Obviously, it changes for T20 cricket. So I don't think there is that much of an issue in jumping between 50-over cricket and Test cricket or four-day cricket. There is an issue jumping from T20 back into it. But, you know, that's, once again, that's a mental, you know, challenge and a mental application. But, you know, I, funny enough, I spoke to Morgs yesterday and I just said, I want you to play the cricket you want to play. There's no point trying to change a player and he's too late to change anyway. So I don't mind him going out and playing the way he wants to play, express himself on a four-day game, not being reckless. But understand that, you know, don't make the same mistake over and over again. If you do that, well, it's a sign of lunacy, but also, you know, it's a quick exit out the door. So, you know, it's got to be coupled with, you know, four-day cricket. It's got to be coupled with, you know, good technique, blunting an attack and then really taking it apart. If Owen can do that and come out and play the way he does, you know, he can tear a game away from him in, you know, an hour and a half. If he bats well, bats long, you know, he'd be plenty.
What do you make of your bowling attack? It's international class bowling attack, isn't it? Toby Rowe-Jones had injuries, Steve Finn had injuries last year, but on paper it's...
Yeah, it's bloody good, isn't it? To be honest. And they're tracking well. Toby's, you know, come on really well. He hasn't bowled for the best part of, what, 9 months, 10 months. But he's still in good spirits and he's, you know, really itching to get out there and start bowling again. Same with Steve Finn. He's probably ahead of where he should be medically, which he has a habit of doing, I hear. It's just a matter of now making sure he doesn't do too much too soon to aggravate the problem again. And, you know, I think the one thing with injuries, if you had a prolonged time out of the game, it's more of a mental trusting the body again to make sure that, you know, you can go through the rigours of bowling. In county cricket, it's probably the toughest, you know, job is a bowler. You know, so you've got to make sure that they're happy physically, but also happy mentally going into each game. But you look at the experience you got with, you know, Finn and Toby, and then you got some good raw youngsters, you know, Tom Helm. You know, he's probably now at a stage where he's got to start producing more often. So look, it's a healthy position. You know, it doesn't mean that you know, it's going to win, guarantee to win us, you know, trophies. But you know, we're in a healthy position. We've got to keep them fit, keep them healthy, and once we do that, you know, I think their skill level will take over at the fifth.
From your observations so far, Stuart, do Middlesex need an overseas player, and if so, what?
Mystery spinner. It always goes down well. There's not too many of those floating around. You know, we got all bases covered, but inexperienced. There's some young kids in there, which I like actually having the young kids in there because they add a bit of energy and, you know, they keep the older boys on their toes, but also what they don't know, they don't know, they don't fear anything. But coupled with that, they need the experience of, you know, doing it over and over again, and that's where you get the, if you get a quality overseas player. This year's going to be difficult to get that overseas player that's going to be here for an extended period of time due to international commitments these days. They're ridiculous. But also having a World Cup in the middle of the year, there's going to be players that are available for some parts and not others. So, you know, we've got to sit down, Gus and I have got to sit down and work out, you know, target players that potentially could be here all summer, which I think, if you've got that continuity, you can really make a difference in a championship. If you pick, you know, a good one with great work ethic, a great opportunity for them to come and showcase their skill. But, you know, all-rounders, you know, death bowling in one-day cricket, I think, is an area where most teams need shoring up. And if you've got that, the ability or the opportunity to select a mystery spinner, they tend to work wonders in both four-day cricket and one-day T20 cricket.
Just have an idea of some of the talent out in the Caribbean now. Is there anyone there you think come over and do a job for you?
Yeah, quite a few. And there's probably some that, you know, haven't played for some time. It's a difficult one. You know, I'd get a number over. For me, it'd be an easy sell to, you know, to Gus and, you know, the CEO, Richard, if they were scoring consistent runs, if they were taking consistent wickets. and you know, you get them over, it's not, they're not guaranteed to come here and do well. But yeah, there are some players. Shea Hope would be one I'd target, not only because you know he's a champion young man, but he can play the game, and he wants to live and breathe cricket. He wants to do it. So he's going to be caught up in World Cups. Plus, they got a lot of cricket. The West Indies, they got the England series now. They got the World Tri series with Ireland and Bangladesh in Ireland. World Cup, and they go back and they play India in Test matches in one day. So it's pretty much the whole season gone. So someone like that who's guaranteed, Jason Holder, someone who's guaranteed to play all the games for the West Indies, so I'll have limited opportunities to come here to play county cricket. But yeah, there's a few up my sleeve, mate, that I won't mention.
How do you rate the chances against England in the Test series?
Look, don't underestimate the home team. You know, there is a core group of senior players that have been there for a while now and have proved that they can do it. A lot of that group played that Test match at Headingley. So if England aren't on their game, West Indies have got the team to, you know, make an upset. And the best thing about going into this series, England obviously going in as the red-hot favourites. Going in as an underdog, you've got nothing to lose. You're not supposed to win. And the Caribbean crowd will tell the Caribbean team that they're not supposed to win. So they like, once again, they like proving people wrong as well. So, look, it should be, you know, reasonably comfortable for England on paper, but out in the ground, you know, there's a few guys there with a point to prove and, you know, opportunities to cement a place for a long time in the West Indies setup, so I wouldn't discount them.
How much could that win at Headingley kind of inform their confidence and self-belief? Do they even hope you were there just to take a lot from that?
Yeah, definitely. You know, just it highlighted the fact that we put all our energy into winning that game and then we couldn't produce it again here at Lord's. But I think the euphoria of the first Test win in England for 17 years, you know, was something that I think is still celebrated in the Caribbean. They don't need much to have a party out there. look, some of the kids who stuck their hand up in that match, you know, they really gained a lot. You know, Shea Hope, Craig Brathwaite, Jason Holder, you know, Shannon Gabriel, they all bowled. Those guys bowled their hearts out. Shannon Gabriel bowled fast every time he bowled the ball. You know, and the two batters, they just, you know, had a dream Test match. But they can do it. That's the thing. It comes down to self belief. They got self belief. They can achieve anything they want. Those guys.
As a coach, what did you have to say to them after the Edgbaston Test, which was obviously a pretty heavy thumping, to come out and produce that a few days later? Was there some magic in the dressing room?
I didn't have to say much. You know, we sat down in the dressing room on day four. Obviously, the Test match had ended. Day five was. Test match ended on day three. Or day two, really. And they just had it out. They just had a meet. We were there as coaches to facilitate. They did all the talking. We might have prompted here and there, but they came up with, you know, what they wanted to do. They all went around and, you know, gave a very honest account of where they were at during that Test match. And once you have that conversation, you become accountable for what you do going forward. They were all accountable and at Headingley. They stuck their hand up. They didn't like it. They got abuse from back home. You should have read some of the social media posts. You know, that's coming from their home crowd. It was tough for them, but mate, I didn't have to say too much. Point them in the right direction. Tell them that you can either go one or two ways. We can fall away and, you know, lose the series 3-0, or we can stand up and fight. What do you want to do? And fight they did.
How would you assess the general state of cricket in the Caribbean when you left it?
Look, I think that there's been massive improvements. I know through, you know, Johnny Grove, the CEO, and Jimmy Adams, Director of Cricket, they've made massive strides forward to make sure that the professionalism has been raised. And that was part of my job, was to create a different culture. So it is in a healthy state. I think in the international scene, the number one team and the A team, is domestic cricket still needs a lot of work, but very difficult to run on a shoestring budget, and to produce, you know, superstars out of, you know, just playing cricket. There's no practice facilities, or hardly any practice facilities. There's no academy set up, so that would be the next port of call. But it is in the pipeline. It's just a matter of waiting for funding to come through and do it. They're trying. That's for sure. There's no sign that they're not trying. They're definitely trying to improve the game and improve the status of West Indies cricket. They've got a way to go, but I think everyone's understanding of it.
Stuart, just on Australia, recently the problems are pretty well documented.
I'm British, by the way.
what do you make of those troubles? Do you think sort of Smith and Warner are saying might help steady this ship?
Yeah, it's one of those things. I got told a while ago that sport shouldn't be cyclical. It shouldn't go in cycles. Someone shouldn't be strong for a period of time and then weak. But you look around the world, that's exactly how it is. Yes, you should. In an ideal world, you wouldn't want to be. But I think it's just the time that, you know, the players that they have playing for Australia, they're good players. You know, whether or not they're playing enough of the right form at the right time, given the national team's commitments, you know, that probably leaves a little bit to be desired. I think the staging of, you know, the Big Bash is right in the middle of our test summer. Probably not the smartest one. It doesn't really help to, you know, keep guys in, you know, in nick in 4-day cricket, red ball cricket. So look, I think there's massive discussions. I keep hearing that the Big Bash is doing so well. If it's doing so well, play it in March, play it in January, February. You know, so, you know, don't take up that time of the test match cricket. Boys should be playing red ball cricket alongside the test matches. I know some of it can't be helped, but there's questions to be asked, and there's, you know, movements to be thrown forward. Everyone's got an opinion at the moment, which is good to see. Some are quite funny. Some are nowhere near the mark. Some are spot on, from my experiences. Australia definitely got the talent. I think we just lost track of what's important. It was always the case when I first started playing great cricket in Brisbane. 15-year-old sharing the dressing room with Alan Border, you know, Greg Ritchie, Kepler Vessels. That doesn't happen much anymore. The test players don't really play club cricket once they're away from international duties. They're wrapped up in cotton wool and, you know, put away, where kids coming through learn from guys who have done it before. I think Dave Warner and Steve Smith playing club cricket this summer not only has given them an idea of what life's really about, but it's also helped the young kids that they've been playing with to improve. You know, they're still very much looked up to in Australia as cricketers, and they're two very fine players. You know, Australia could do worse than get them straight back in.
Stuart, what's that about specialist batting and bowling coaches in recent years, but obviously the guys who were both in place have left since the last season? Would you be looking to bring in people to help you out in those areas?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, I've got a batting background, so I can shoulder most of the workload there. But we are looking to you know, gain the services of a couple of specialist coaches. The one area I really want to target is fielding. You know, the best fielding teams often go a long way to winning white ball competitions. You know, as I've seen, the skill level with bat and ball is pretty good. You know, fielding, I think, is one area where every team can improve. And that's one target we got, obviously, and also, you know, the white ball bowling. I think red ball bowling's been pretty decent the last couple of years with the attack we've got, but the white ball skills, you know, seem to be lacking. So looking to target those areas. You know, we've got a few guys in the pipeline, so hopefully discussions are progressing nicely with those in question. But there will be assistance in arriving here.
Thanks, gents.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much. Anybody got up in line for a one-to-one radio straight to you?